Welcome back. Good to see you. My name is Joel. I'm one of the leaders in the church. Welcome and good to speak to you if you're joining us on video at the Racecourse or Shoreham or the Villas in Hove. We are in the second part of a series of teaching called This Is No Religion, where we're looking carefully at the subject of how we can learn to do a better job at bringing God's goodness and blessing into the communities, the world around us. If you're a follower of Jesus, you are a carrier of Jesus. You're a carrier of the goodness and the blessing of God. But sometimes we need help and wisdom to bring this goodness of God to those that we know, to our friends, colleagues, relatives, neighbors, and just the people that God has surrounded us with, who he loves very much. And so we're looking at the Bible to see what practical lessons we can learn about how that can be done best. Last week we looked at prayer. We did begin with prayer. So we're doing this according to a big acronym, BLESS, begin with prayer. Today we're looking at listen. So I guess this last week you have been praying non-stop, 24/7, every one of you. You look like it. You look angelic this morning. You look like you're perfect people. You've obviously, none of you have prayed 1 minute more than you did the week before. No, it's somewhere in the middle, isn't it? It's somewhere, you've probably made some progress, which is God's grace, and we rejoice in all of that, I trust. I'm trusting that we're all trying to take this on board and move forward. So we're looking at how we listen today, and to help us with that, I'm going to read to you from a place in the New Testament which describes an event in Jesus' life, which some of you will know. But I'm going to read to Luke chapter 18 and verse 35 to the end of the chapter. It says this: as he drew near to Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging, and hearing a crowd going by, he inquired what this meant. They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by," and he cried out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And those who were in front rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and commanded him to be brought to him. And when he came near, he asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" He said, "Lord, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Recover your sight. Your faith has made you well." There's a story that is told by Henri Nouwen, and I can never pronounce his surname correctly, but a monk who, or a mystic who wrote some very famous books. And he tells a story of another mystic who lived in the desert who would occasionally visit a nearby town. And when he did so, queues of people in their thousands would stop to spend time with him and would arrange appointments and try very hard to meet with him. And this occasion, when it happened, there was a traveler in the town, and he was curious about why this happened. Why do all these people queue up to spend time with this particular man? And so he joined the queue. He wanted to find out for himself, and he managed to get an appointment. And after waiting in line for ages, he finally gets his slot, and he gets to sit down with this mystical man from the desert, expecting to be receiving pearls of wisdom from this man. Finds out the guy doesn't actually say anything to him. He simply looks at him and listens intently, intelligently. He listens compassionately. He gives him his full attention actively and listens. And that's all. But by the end of it, this traveler feels like he's never felt before. He feels like something's happened in his soul because he's been able to just share his heart, even with a stranger. And I think we are all a bit like that. You all know what it's like to be in situations where you've perhaps gone to somebody with a heavy burden and thought, how am I going to get some advice? How am I going to get some help? I need some wisdom. I need some input. And you sit down with someone and you pour out your heart to them, your problems, your difficulties, and you may find that you get nothing from them in terms of advice. They may have nothing to say to you particularly, but by the end of your time, you still feel somehow helped. You feel blessed. You feel like something nevertheless has done you good. We need to be listened to. It's part of what makes us human. It's been part of cultures like ours through history, in fact. It's interesting to note that for centuries, it would have been normal for just about everybody in our society, and still is in some societies, for everybody to get fairly regular time in one of these things, where you go and you tell somebody what's going on in your life. You speak out the secrets of your heart. You pour out some of your griefs, certainly some of your guilt, some of your shame. And this has been received or seen as a kind of therapeutic thing. It helps people to feel, oh, I feel a bit absolved. I feel maybe a little bit better, a little bit lighter. Now, we live in a very secular age where the vast majority of the public have kind of put that behind them, have moved on from confessionals. We don't have that kind of a thing in our culture. And even in church culture, in this church, we don't have a priesthood. We don't have confessional booths in that way because we believe there's a better way biblically. But nevertheless, as a whole culture, we've kind of moved on. Even so, however, you may have noticed that people still go to someone to confess. They just go to something like this. They go and see a secular priest. They go and pour out their heart to a therapist, to a psychiatrist. They go and share what's going on in the kind of lower regions, if you like, of their soul. There's something about humanity that wants to be heard, listened to, wants to be known. And actually, the Bible gives us a helpful way of explaining this urge. Because the Bible teaches that we are made, we have our origins, we have our beginnings in a God who is relational. He does relationship perfectly because he himself is a team, a group, like a family. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. You may have always imagined God as one person. And many people assume that's what we mean when we talk about God. The image that comes into your mind perhaps is one personality, or maybe even no personality. These days, people tend to think they're spiritual because they believe in a kind of a spiritual force, some kind of ethereal spiritual cloud, power, unity that holds everything together. It doesn't have any personality, but it's kind of real nevertheless. Well, the God that the Bible presents is very different than that. The God that the Bible presents, you wouldn't really make up, which is perhaps one of the reasons we should take this God seriously. It's hard to make him up. He is not even one person. He is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, three persons but one God. In fact, he's been that way always, which means always he's been in relationship. Always he's been knowing, hearing, speaking. He's always been able to do friendship naturally. If God is just one person, then the first other person that he makes is the first time he ever has to do a relationship, and he's had no practice, and it's not natural to him to do relationship. It's really weird. It's like, oh gosh, I'm not used to this, another person. But the God of the Bible has always been doing relationship, and we, the Bible teaches, are made in his likeness, and so we also are relational. We thrive on it. If we don't do relationship consistently, then we don't do well. You may be an introverted person. You may imagine the idea of, you know, living on a desert island with some attraction. But I tell you, even if that's true of you, you can't long term do life on your own without ending up, you know, speaking to a volleyball, or, you know, as the movie puts it, you can't end up. It won't do you good. Because it's actually in relationships that we find ourselves anyway. It's in knowing and listening and being listened to and being heard that we kind of discover more of who we are anyway. So we thrive on it because we're made in the image of a God who thrives on knowing and being known. And actually, the Bible presents us with this kind of a God in all kinds of ways. If you go into the Old Testament, you get to the book of Psalms, which is this list of poems and songs that speak about the nature of God in all kinds of ways. And some words that are really familiar to us, if we know our Bibles, Psalm 139, say this: "O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it." Later on in the same psalm, he says this: "How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I were to count them, they are more than the sand. I awake and I am still with you." But God, the Bible presents, knows people well, thinks about them incessantly, all the time. If we were to count his thoughts about us, they would outnumber the sand. Have you ever imagined a God like that? It's the God of the Bible. And he's so intent on knowing us well that he even became one of us so that he could walk our walk. He could know our lives from experience. The God of the Bible became a man. And one of the interesting things to notice about Jesus is how much of his life he must have spent listening. It's one of the things we tend to skip. We don't quite notice it. And I suppose there's a reason for that. It's hard to write a biography of somebody. When you read the stories of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you read the stories of someone's deeds, the things he said and the things he did in front of people. It wouldn't make for a lot of exciting copy if the Gospels were just filled with all the things he listened to. That day, Jesus listened. You know, the next day, he listened. After that, he listened some more. So we have to kind of take it from a few key verses that describe whole chunks of his life and take that seriously. Consider the fact that he didn't go public as a teacher and a preacher and a doer of miracles until he was 30. And his public ministry was 3 years. So we're talking about a small fraction of his life where he was doing his talking and speaking. The majority of his life was spent listening and learning, watching, gaining wisdom, growing in wisdom. The Bible says even as a child, he was found in the temple, listening, asking the teachers of religion careful questions. And then it says he went back to Nazareth to be with his earthly parents, to learn and listen from them, to submit to them, to receive their instruction. I always think that must have been so strange for someone who was growingly aware that he is the Son of God to receive wisdom from a carpenter in Nazareth. I always think it must have been weird for Jesus not to blurt out occasionally how tempting it might have been when his dad's telling him how to make another table. "Dad, I know how to make tables. I made the wood. I know how to make everything." He is incredibly patient, taking time to understand and listen to the world that his father's put him in, sent him into, to receive and listen. It speaks so much about the kind of God he is. He comes into our world, comes down to our level, stands alongside us to speak to us. And in the story I read to you, you get a classic example of it. Do you notice that when he's healing the blind man, the first thing he says to him is, "What do you want me to do for you?" And that's kind of characteristic. You see it in a few other places where Jesus seems to look beneath the surface and listen carefully to what's going on in the heart. He wants to understand what's really at stake in someone's life. What are the real issues they're facing? "What do you want me to do for you?" might seem a strange question to ask a blind beggar. It's so easy to assume instantly what this person wants. But Jesus didn't do that. He didn't see a blind beggar and think, category B, blind beggar. heal, move on. You know, he listens, he asks, he prods, he tries to find out what's the need. Now, it turns out the guy did want to be healed, so yeah, it's fair enough. But he wants to know, nevertheless. He pushes for the knowledge, the intimacy, the information that's personal. And it's the same with us. God is intent on knowing you. He's intent on intimacy. He's intent on relationship. And he sends you. If you're a follower of Jesus, you're sent into the world just as Jesus himself was sent by the Father. You have been sent. And so the way that our life will be characterized, if we're following Jesus rightly, will be with lots of listening. Lots of learning, lots of receive. By the way, you're doing it brilliantly at the moment. Okay, I'm the one that's failing at the moment. I'm doing all the talking. But you and I appreciate the irony. But you get the point. We are very attracted to the speaking parts, especially certain ones of us. You know, we're attracted to the proclaiming, to the teaching, to the preaching. And I'm not going to apologize for that. Jesus preached. You think I preach a while. Jesus preached till it was dark. Jesus preached for hours and hours and hours. People forgot they were hungry. People realized, we're thousands of miles away from the shops. We're in trouble because we've been listening to this preacher for so long. Jesus taught and communicated and proclaimed. The Bible doesn't say anything against proclaiming, but it makes it very clear that it's done in the context of understanding and listening and receiving and learning the people that we're speaking to. And Jesus did that. He spoke to the masses, but he listened to the individuals amongst as well, often. He modeled it. And we, as Christians, need to therefore follow his example. We don't always do this easily. Our instinct is to speak first and then listen later. Very often, many of us. This is a temptation we face. And the Bible says a lot about that temptation. You can get places like Proverbs chapter 10, where it says, when words are many, transgression is not lacking. But whoever restrains his lips is prudent. In other words, where there's a lot of talking, sin is not far behind. And Christians, religious people, church-going people are often prone to that. We speak quick. We want to speak. We want to be heard. Quick, quick, quick. We might even think, I'm not so much a preacher or a communicator. I'm not a public person. That's not my issue. I just like loving people. I really like to love people. I'm not one of those preachers. I just like to get around people and love them. And that's a wonderful instinct. But listen, it's possible to kid ourselves even there, to think that we're following Jesus by loving people, when in reality, we haven't taken the time to get to know them. Have you ever had the experience of someone love you who doesn't really care to know you at all? They're so busy loving you, they don't really want to hear you or listen to you. Excuse me, don't interrupt. I'm busy loving you right now. That's an easy thing. It's because we feel sent. We feel, I've been called to go and love and proclaim. I've been called to go and do these things. Yeah, you have. But look at the way he did it. Look at the way he listened. Look at the way he knew people. Marriages that struggle, marriages that go into bad times, more often than not, a characteristic of a struggling marriage is that a spouse, often the man, thinks that they know what the other person is going through emotionally, assumes that he knows, but hasn't really taken the time to listen, hasn't listened to the thoughts and the feelings, and doesn't really want to. Now, I know it's not going to be just the guy, but it's probably more commonly the guy in situation after situation. And it's a helpful pointer. Assuming that we know what people are going through, assuming that we know what a person's issues are, can mean that we fire over their heads all the time with all our words, with all our loving, with all our deeds. We're not actually hitting the target. We're quite busy. We're doing stuff, but it doesn't necessarily connect because we haven't listened and understood. And I suppose for people who love Jesus and want to obey the Bible, we can even find this difficult because we love Jesus and want to obey the Bible. We take on a couple of false assumptions. One of them is you either listen to God or you listen to the world. You either listen to what Jesus has to say, or you listen to what this sinful world has to say. And you can't do both. Well, listen, that isn't true. That is not true at all. We're called to listen to both. And the fact is, and I'll come back to this, it's healthy when you have listened to God. Having listened to God well, you are in a good place to listen to the world. You can do it without insecurity because you found confidence in what God has to say. And you can start listening. Because the other assumption that we make is to listen to people is to agree with everything they have to say and to eventually be won over to a position that I don't really want to take. Again, that's not true. We can listen well, even if at the end of the day we don't agree with what the person's saying, but we can honor and dignify and show compassion and mercy to people who we at the end we say, well, look, listen, because I trust God and I trust what he has to say, I don't agree with everything you're saying, but I want to listen nevertheless. And so we probably struggle because of a couple of false assumptions that we needn't take on. Look at Jesus. Look at how well he spoke. Look how confident he was. One of the things that's so striking about Jesus, you may have noticed this and may have thought about it, he seemed to be pretty good friends with irreligious people who seemed to be quite far from God, but it wasn't because he didn't speak with authority. So we tend to assume you either speak with authority or you are friends with sinners. You can't do both. You either speak it like it is, speak for God, say what God says clearly, frankly, honestly, openly, or you connect with people and just let them speak and just befriend and endorse everything they say. Jesus managed to go down the middle. Jesus managed to speak with authority. You read some of Jesus' sermons. They're scary. They're shocking. They're so blunt. They're horrifying, some of them. They're even rude, some of them. The things Jesus said were striking, firm. But people loved being around him. Tax collectors, sinners. He ate and drank with everybody. People genuinely wanted to listen to him, wanted to receive him. I reckon a lot of that was to do with how well he listened. A lot of that was to do with how well he knew and understood and listened to people. Jesus shows that we needn't choose between listening to God and listening to people. We listen to God primarily. We get our truth from God. We get our convictions from God. That's why we started last week and not this week, right? We started with begin with prayer. In other words, begin with God. Begin by getting to know him. And then from that position, get to know the world in which you've been sent. That's the right way around. But because you've got to know him, it's like boats going out on high seas. If they have enough ballast in the boat, they can go out. They can go out onto storms even. Boats that are well weighed down with good ballast in the boat, they can actually weather quite choppy circumstances because there's weight, there's substance, there's mass on the boat. It's the same with us. If we're weighed down healthily with conviction, with substance, knowing what the Bible says, knowing who Jesus is, knowing what he's done, knowing what he's done in our lives, friends, we are able to go out and listen to a world that wants to speak to us. And we can listen well, and we can receive what they have to say and hear it carefully and wisely. Now, I don't pretend that this is an easy thing. I find it a challenge, but I also find it a kind of a releasing thing because it means I don't have to be impressive ultimately. I can be on people's level. There's a writer called John Bavinck who put it in quite a helpful way. I'll read you a quotation that he used. This is a man who speaks about how the church is supposed to bless the world. He says, "As long as I laugh," speaking about someone who's from a different religion, "as long as I laugh at his foolish superstition, I look down upon him. I've not yet found the key to his soul. As soon as I understand that what he does in a noticeably naive and childish manner, I also do and continue to do again and again, although in a different form, as soon as I actually stand next to him, I can, in the name of Christ, stand in opposition to him and convince him of sin, as Christ did with me. and still does each day. Jesus has come down to our level. Jesus has shown us that by standing next to people, in their shoes, in their world, we can actually serve them by speaking, even in opposition to them, lovingly. So listening becomes vital to our mission. And Jesus' disciples, as they went out into the world, they didn't get this too wrong. You look at the way that the Apostle Paul describes his mission, the way he wanted to bring God's blessing to the places he was sent to. He describes it in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. He says, "For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I became as a Jew in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I've become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings." This is why Christianity has flourished. This is why it has gone from continent to continent, culture to culture, century to century. This is why the Christian church looks different wherever you go. The Christian church doesn't really have a monoculture. Where it does, it gets stuck. But where it travels, it goes native. And when it goes native, it starts to connect. This is why the church must always be listening carefully to the culture around it, which, by the way, isn't always easy. One of the reasons it's tricky for the church to listen to the world that it's put in is because it can be too successful. When a church grows and becomes kind of settled and steady in the context that it's been placed in, it starts to find it easier to listen to itself than the world around it. It's like that with any organization. An organization can start with a desire to communicate with a certain group of people, and it does it well. It does it so successfully that the organization grows. The church grows. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But as that happens, the people who are leading the organization, leading the church, are overwhelmed with the voices of the people that have joined the church rather than the voice of the people that they're actually sent to reach out to. And so they start listening and having this communication only with themselves. And the church does that very easily. It slips into this mistake of forgetting who its audience is. Who are we supposed to communicate to? Who are we meant to be listening to and receiving information from? We do that as a church. We do that. I do that as a leader. I find this a temptation. I have to fight it actively or I will fall into it. Jesus told a story that seemed to be getting at this in Luke chapter 15, where he describes a shepherd who's rounding up sheep and gathers 99 sheep and discovers that there's one missing. Now, that is a good shepherd. Because when you've got 99 sheep around you, it's really hard to notice the one that's missing. Because of, well, what do you think might be a decisive factor? What's kind of in his mind at that point? The noise, okay? It sounds a little bit like this. Now, I can hear about 7 or 8 there, okay? Think of 99. Okay, we're talking about a lot of noise, and he's counting them, and they're moving around. He's thinking, maybe the temptation to think, these guys are noisy, these guys are active, these guys, I think I'll just go with these. I'll assume they're all here. But the good shepherd thinks, no, I'm still hearing the sound of another one that's far away. I'm still aware of this other one that's missing. And Jesus is describing himself when he says that. And every church leader, every church needs to follow the master in this respect. Needs to be thinking, yeah, we mustn't just be having a conversation with ourselves. We must listen to the people around who are without Christ, who are lost without Jesus Christ. And that means very often churches have to make decisions and the people within the church think, you're making decisions as if we don't matter that much. You're making decisions as if the people outside the church matter more than we do. You kind of got it. That's kind of right. If it feels like that sometimes, don't don't be too quick to panic. Don't worry too much, because you may be seeing a sign of a healthy church, that we're listening intently, like Jesus wants us to the world around, trying to serve it as best we can. And we find this a challenge for that reason. We also find it a challenge because the world keeps changing. And the city keeps changing. And that's interesting to me that Paul says, to the Jews, I became a Jew. But Paul, you are a Jew. If you know your Bible, you know that Paul was born a Jew. Why would he say, I became a Jew? Here's why. Because he was intent on always knowing exactly what was going through the culture he was in now. See, I was born and raised in Brighton. My biggest weakness is to think, well, I know Brighton. I know exactly what Brightonians need. I know exactly what everyone's thinking all the time. Yeah, you know, I could be kidding myself there. And to know people and listen to them is important. And to even go away sometimes and come back is quite a revealing thing to do, because you see the gaps and you understand, oh, okay, things have changed. The city's moved on. The culture, the questions, the issues have moved on. So churches need to work hard on this kind of, I suppose, what you could call this corporate application of listening. That we, as a church, as an organization, become deliberate about the way that we listen to the world around us. That we're prepared. We're prepared to accept changes. We notice changes and we rejoice and we learn how to connect with the world around us. And it means that churches have to change quite a lot. Churches have to be ready to adapt. So if you say to yourself, I've come to CCK because I love this church. I have found the perfect church for me. It is just wonderful. I love this church. Just be careful, because in a couple of years you won't. Because it won't be just for you. And you'll be called to follow the master, the good shepherd, to reach out to the ones who need, if you like, the perfect church for them. But there's this individual application as well. I want to close on this because this is massively important. See, I'm talking about the church and how we as an organization connect with the city around us. And that's all very well as long as we're all, you know, joining up with Jesus in doing that. But what about us as individuals? See, the challenge is really the rubber hits the rubber when it comes to how we connect with our friends, how we connect with individual people that Jesus has brought into our lives. And this is exciting, because what it means is that blessing the world, doing mission with Jesus, is a little bit easier than we thought, actually, because a whole load of it has to do with just listening. And you know what? Although it's difficult, when you get the hang of it, it's a joy to sit and listen and ask questions. It's not simple. It's not a cinch. So I will try and just say a few practical things to finish with, some helpful, hopefully helpful, just wisdom. Some of it's kind of common sense, but let's think about it. What are the things we need to know? One or two things for the head first, and then some things for the heart. The tips on listening, I would boil them down for the sake of time to questions and context. Questions and context. Good listeners ask a lot of questions. They ask questions carefully, and they spend time connecting by just wanting to learn and listen. I've noticed this with some people. I've noticed this negatively with others. Some people who say, "Can I get some time with you? I'd like to get some time with you because I think there'd be some things I could learn." And I think, if you really think so, okay, well, let's fix the time up. And then I find they sit me down and they talk to me for ages. They kind of lecture me. Okay, right, interesting. I'm not sure if you learned anything there, but thanks for the time. You know, it's kind of, I realize, oh, this person didn't want to learn anything. They haven't drawn out, they haven't asked any questions. Other people I've been struck by, a friend of mine, a pastor in another church in this city, whenever I get to be with him, I've noticed he just asks me questions constantly. And I'd like to ask him a few. I think he's an amazing leader. I've learned just by watching him. But I never get to ask any, because he's just constantly asking, how do you do this? What do you do about this? And it's so endearing. It's so humble. It's so honoring. It makes me feel like, wow, this guy really respects what I have to say, poor fool. So I fill his mind with crazy ideas just to throw his church into reverse. It is amazingly, you know what I mean. When people sit you down and ask you careful questions, you sense the encouragement, the sense of being honored in that situation. Questions just honor. And when you ask questions, you can learn a lot just by asking very simple. I mean, two questions that you can push with, very simple. Tell me your story. tell me your story. Trying to draw it out, and then when they start telling you, ask further questions. Knowing what someone's story is, you draw out so much. You'll connect with them on a heart level. You'll find that you won't get bored. I know the feeling of thinking, do I really imagine that I could spend half an hour with this person and stay alert to everything they have to say? Well, what I find is it's always yes if I ask them, what's your story? What's gone on in your life? Because something will be said. There'll be some part of their life that will strike your attention and make you want to know more. And the second one would be, what's your passion? What are the things you long for? What are the things you desire? What are the things you are passionate about? What are the things you would love to see happen? What are the things that make you sad? What are the sorrows? What are the griefs? If you feel you've got that opportunity. Questions that draw people out, that go for the 7/8 under the surface rather than the top of the iceberg, to find ways to connect under the surface. These are things that are just practical, obvious things to grow in. And they may be easier said than done by a preacher here standing in front of you all, but nevertheless, they're worth sharing advice on. Second thing is the heart stuff. It's worth thinking why we don't want to listen. Why is it that we struggle with the thought of listening in the first place? And I suppose there's a couple of reasons that have occurred to me as I've been preparing this message this week. I think one of the reasons I find it hard to listen to people sometimes is because of impatience. It's not just because I'm bored of the conversation, I want to get away. And that can happen, to be sure. But impatience with the idea that I don't get to say my bit. I don't get closure. When I'm listening to someone, they might say something that jars me, that I don't like to hear, that I don't want to listen because it will throw my view of the world sideways. It will send a few things spinning. I don't know if I want to listen to someone else's opinions that I definitely won't agree with, and I'm not sure if there's any point in us. I find in my own gut a slight sense of impatience. I don't really want to face that. And I suppose there that what we're doing is we're kind of imagining that we are sovereign, that as long as we understand everything that's going on, that we're in control of every conversation, we're in control of every belief, every set of opinions, every worldview, that everything will be okay. But then we just need to humble ourselves, say, God, you're sovereign. I know what you've taught me, and I'm going to trust. I'm not going to assume that I have to have closure on every situation, every concept, every mental issue. I don't have to have closure as some kind of idol. I can listen. I can listen to opinions, even if I'm listening and thinking, I don't agree with that, but I want to listen. That's healthy because it prevents me from making an idol out of, I suppose, what we could call closure, intellectual closure, if that makes sense. But more, I guess, more down to earth, more basic is just pride. I don't want to listen to people because I want my turn. I want to talk. I've had enough of listening. I want to be sovereign in this situation. I want to show off. I want to shine. I want my glory. And the listener is someone who doesn't need glory, doesn't need to shine. The listener is actually someone who's already heard the best news already. The good listener, the best listener, is the one who knows what he needs to know or she needs to know already. He's heard the best news at all. He's heard Jesus say, I forgive you your sins. I love you. I raise you up. You are a child in my Father's house. You are received. You are welcomed. You are dignified. You are honored. You are cherished. You are loved. You are established at my table to sit with me and eat with me as my own. The person that knows that and has the security that comes from being received by God has a kind of head start in listening to the world around. And for some of you, that's the only thing you need to do today. In fact, let's face it, that's what we all need to do, right? There's no one in this room who is equipped in themselves to go out and be the perfect listener and just copy Jesus and be brilliant at it. No, 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 no. We're way too insecure. We're way too needy. Let's first come to Jesus Christ. Let's come to the table. Let's take of his body and his blood, remembering what he has done for us. Knowing that everything we need is in him, and he who has Christ has everything. He who has the one who has all things has all things. And if you have Jesus Christ, you're an incredibly secure person. You may not feel it, but let your feelings get aligned with the truth about you. That God sent his son to take your burden, to take your sorrow, to take your guilt, to take your shame, and to set you up forever as his child. If you're secure in that today, we can go and listen to our world, ready to receive and to serve them. And maybe for some of you, you've never ever thought of it like that. You've never thought that God would have time for you. You never thought that God would want to listen to you. Maybe you feel even practically, you feel like, I've been trying to speak to God, but he doesn't hear me. He doesn't know what I'm going through. He doesn't understand what I'm feeling. So you tell me about this God who listens, he hasn't listened to me. Well, my friend, you've got no idea. You've got no idea. The same writer of the Psalms in Psalm 56, he says, you know my troubles. You know my tears. You collect them in your bottle. That's an intimate phrase, isn't it? He collects my tears. He knows every sorrow. He knows every grief. If he knows that much, we can be secure. And you can be sure of it because of the cross of Jesus Christ. Because of Jesus Christ. Because if you know that God has allowed his son to die upon the cross, and even while he was dying, a needy, desperate villain, a crooked man, a criminal, on the cross next to him, says to him, remember me when you come into your kingdom. That's all he says. He just cries out desperate hope, maybe he'll listen to me. Of course he listened to him. Jesus says, today you'll be with me in paradise. Jesus is like that. He listens to you. Even if you feel he hasn't, well, look at the cross. Look at what he's done for you. It will give you confidence that he listens.